Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Traveler episode 197. Today the amateur traveler goes to beautiful but intense Sicily. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into today's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, in London, officials are trying to teach people not to leave valuables in their car, so they're having the police go to unlock cars and steal stuff from them. I'm sure that'll go just fine. A British tourist whose knowledge of French was a little sketchy ended up spending the night in the Hôtel de Ville, which, though it looks like hotel, is the French word for City Hall. She walked into City Hall looking for a restroom, and while she was there, they finished the business and locked the doors with her inside. Just a reason why you should study a little of the language before you go. And then, speaking of the French, if you are rescued by the French government from a war zone or some other place where you probably didn't have any business going, they're going to charge you. It seems fair enough to me. For links to those news stories, as well as other news stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. Remember, if you're a travel news junkie, check out the new podcast, This Week in Travel, at thisweekintravel.com. I'd like to welcome Madeline Jawar, who has come to us from Italy Beyond the Obvious to talk about Sicily. Madeline, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Madeline, in addition to having traveled to Sicily, you've also led tours to Sicily in the past.
No, I was a tour guide in Italy.
Okay.
I worked in Italy as a tour guide all over the place. I went to Sicily on my vacation, and I've been several times, and actually chose to go to Sicily on my honeymoon. When my husband asked me where I wanted to go, I chose Sicily. Sicily is, in my mind, the place that the professional tour guides go. The tour guides who are working in Italy, who are living in Italy and working in Italy, where do they go on vacation? They go to Sicily.
And why is that? Why Sicily?
Sicily is Italy concentrate compact in the sense that everything that you love about Italy is in Sicily, and it's a smaller space, and so it's easier to get around, but it still has the gorgeous scenery, the amazing food, the vibrant culture, and then also it's sort of Italy, I sort of want to say in the rough, the infrastructure is sort of less developed. It's sort of the way Italy probably was before it got super touristy. I find it sort of more authentic. I almost want to use Italy on steroids, which is hard to say because Italy is kind of already on steroids in terms of like the art and the architecture. But Sicily is influenced by first the Greeks came and then the Romans came and then the Saracens slash Africans slash Arabs, however you want to call them, came. And then the Normans came, and then the Spanish came, and then it's Italian. And so you really can look around and see all of those influences. And that's part of what's so fabulous about Sicily, is it's really in your face, and it's really gorgeous.
Now, I've heard some people say that when you're going to Italy for the first time, you should go to Rome, and if you find it too intense, you should go north. And if you're okay with it, just keep going south. It'll get more and more intense, finally culminating in Sicily. That sounds like you're in that school of thought also.
You know, I haven't heard that, but that is a great rule of thumb. that is a great rule of thumb. And it is. It's even in terms of like the mafia attitude, like the farther south you go, people are sort of more aware of it and it's more ingrained in their mentality and they won't necessarily talk about it. But you get to know the Sicilians and there's a basic assumption that things may be corrupt and that's how it is. And you trust each other and you trust your family. And when you get to know somebody, you're friends for life. But there's a certain sort of wariness along those same lines, a sort of chaos. I mean, I find, you know, as you say, if you're okay with that, you go south of Rome and Naples is sort of more chaotic and,
right.
But more vibrant and more sort of Italian. I mean, one of the posts I wrote was Naples is Italy's most Italian city, but that's just because I haven't written a post on Palermo yet. I mean, it gets more vibrant and more chaotic. And actually, of the places that I've driven in Italy, Catania and Palermo, and maybe Naples, but Naples not as much, but Catania and Palermo are probably the two places I would choose to never drive again. As a tour guide, I had to drive miles and miles
and
miles.
Right.
But it's, yeah, super chaotic.
And I haven't driven south of Rome, but I have driven in Rome where I'm being passed on both sides by a family of four on a Vespa at the same time while I'm trying to navigate out of the twisty little streets. So I can only imagine.
Oh, yeah, it's stressful. Stressful and, yeah, and no rules and, yeah. There are lines on the road, but nobody pays attention to
them. Right, sure. So where would we start with Sicily? How do we approach this island?
There are probably two ways to approach it, depending on what kind of traveler you are. If you want a more of like an overview of Sicily and don't mind going a little faster pace, you could do a kind of circle of the island. Or if you wanted to explore things a little bit more in depth, then you could sort of divide it into east versus west.
And circling the island, Palermo to Syracuse, through Messina, or what would be the route for there?
You could come from the mainland. So yeah, you start in Messina. It doesn't matter if you go clockwise or counterclockwise, but start in Messina, which is close to the toe of the Italian peninsula. Heading down the east coast, when you arrive from the Italian mainland, there is one of the most famous places in all of Sicily is a little town called Taormina, and I'm sure you've heard of it.
Mm-hmm, sure.
It's in all the guidebooks. It's got a gorgeous Greek theater that was sort of redone by the Romans, and so it's all up in the air in terms of is it Greek or is it Roman? Well, it's got a Greek base and then built on top Roman. It's got a gorgeous setting. You can see, you know, snow-capped Mount Etna in the distance, and it's beautiful. But this is one of the things that I roll my eyes a little bit when I read the guidebooks about Taormina, because Taormina is beautiful, but it is probably the most touristy spot in Sicily. To the extent that I wouldn't go there in May through August. I've been there in August, and I just went beeline to see the theater, tried to sit down and have a meal somewhere, and left, because it's completely different than visiting it in an off-season. It's gorgeous, but it's kind of ruined when it's overrun with tourists. You could go south and hit Syracuse, which has an amazing 3,000-year-old Greek amphitheater.
Right, sure.
And then you could head along the south coast. The southeastern part of Sicily was destroyed by an earthquake and rebuilt in about the 17th century. And so in a period of about 50 years, they built hundreds of churches. And so it's the sort of Spanish Byzantine area. And it's got two Michelin star restaurants in the small area. If you read the travel magazines right now, I've heard it described as the next Tuscany. And so you could hit that area, which would be Ragusa, Noto, Ragusa Ibla. And then moving along the south shore, you hit amazing beaches, and then you hit the famous Valley of the Temples near Agrigento, which is Greek temples from about the 6th century BC. And those are just spectacular. Those are one of the highlights of any trip to Sicily. They're just a huge area that you walk around outdoors in the hot sun, it should be noted. So bring that, bring water, don't go in August. But I mean, just stunning. You feel like you've gone to Greece. I mean, just incredible. Not really in a lot of ruins. I mean, in really pretty good shape considering they're 2,500 years old. There's an archaeological museum in Agrigento as well to sort of supplement the experience that sort of paints the picture for you so you can get a better idea of how people lived and how the Valley of the Temples was actually used.
And as I recall, that museum is striking in particular for some of the mosaics that are there.
Yes. And Sicily, actually, that's a great point. Sicily has amazing mosaics. My favorite mosaics in Sicily, there's Morale, which is just outside of Palermo, and it's gold mosaics. Just incredible. Another great thing to see in Palermo with the mosaics is the Cappella Palatina, which has amazing mosaics in the Palazzo dei Normanni and is one of Palermo's most famous buildings, along with the Duomo of Palermo, of course, which is down the street and just an amazing, incredible structure. But the interesting thing that I find about the mosaics in Sicily is if you look at the mosaics in Agrigento, the mosaics in Monreale, in the Duomo, the mosaics in the Cappella Palatina, they're all your standard religious motifs, saints and angels and your standard mosaics. But then if you go to the center of Sicily, to a place called Piazza Armerina and the Villa del Casale, it's actually a hunting lodge and it was a private residence. And those mosaics were uncovered about 50, 60 years ago. And they are vastly different from any mosaics you've ever seen. They're girls in bikinis. Yeah, they're African animals. There's elephants and lions and cheetahs and nothing religious. And right. So if you like mosaics, Sicily is the place. In a small space, you can sort of mosaic hop, you know. Comparing the mosaics, I found, is one of the most interesting things about Sicily. That's one of my favorite things in Sicily, is the Villa Imperiale in Piazza Armerina.
Which is Roman origin, as I recall.
Yes, it's a Roman villa, yes. Yeah, there's so much Greek, but yeah, that one is Roman.
Well, you say so much Greek, and I think probably a lot of people are surprised when they're traveling around. You were mentioning Agrigento, and suddenly you've got Greek temples. But of course, this used to be Magna Graeca, Greater Greece, and I don't know that everyone has that in their mind, that this and part of southern Italy used to be basically part of Greece. So it is interesting, the richness of all the different people who have been in charge in Sicily over the years.
Yeah, the Greeks had Sicily for about 500 years between about the 8th and the 3rd century BC, and so they kind of had it to themselves, and Syracuse was up there with Constantinople. Syracuse was just described as one of the most beautiful cities in the world back then, and it still has remnants of that you can see, but it's certainly lost a lot of its fame.
And where should we go next? What should we see?
From Agrigento, continuing clockwise around the island, you go up onto the west coast, and there's some more amazing ruins in Selinunte, which I actually haven't seen, but they are on my list. It's just because they are on cliffs overlooking the ocean, and you can go down to the beach and look up at them, and then you can go up to the ruins and walk around them. Still heading north, there's a great little town called Erice, and it's up high. You gotta go up a, feels like a mountain, to get to the top. And the funny thing is that when we were in Erice, we loved it, and it was great, but not for any of the reasons that we heard about. We heard it was this beautiful little town with great Duomo, and we had rented a car, and we drove up there, and it was in a cloud. And so we saw nothing. We had no architecture. I mean, literally, we were in a cloud. But it was magical. I mean, it was just this magical atmosphere, and we just loved it for that. I have great memories of Erice, but it's not like anything you would read in a guidebook, what the guidebooks say for Erice.
The first time you went to Sicily, what was your biggest surprise? That sounded like that was one of them.
That was one of them. The biggest surprise was the African influence, because you get to Catania, and we spent a few days in Catania the first time. In Piazza Duomo with the big cathedral, there's an obelisk with an elephant on it. And you don't see that in the rest of Sicily. And I've been to Piazza Armerina and seen those mosaics several times. And the first time, you're sort of looking at the mosaics and you're saying, okay, they're not gold and they're not saints and there's no baby Jesus and there's no important people of the town who are featured who needed to be saved in these mosaics like there are in others. But why are there tigers? And why are, you know, why is there a hippo? And then also in the cooking, you see couscous and you see spices like cinnamon being used and raisins. And so the African/Arab influence has just permeated the culture. And it's small, but it's all over the place and it's really noticeable. And so that is something that just keeps cropping up if you pay attention. And that, I just think, is one of the most fascinating things about Sicily, because that's something that really differentiates it from the rest of Italy.
Right. Well, and I guess as I think about it, really, the African influence happened in two different areas, because back when Rome was still getting set up, it was ruled by Carthage there for a while. And then later on, of course, as you mentioned, what we called the Saracens had control over Sicily. So it's really kind of gone back and forth between Europe and Africa twice.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a fan of history, in case you couldn't tell.
I mean, it's amazing to see it with your own eyes. We don't see that in North America.
And I think I interrupted you. You were still going around the island and were at a city that was hidden in the clouds when I stopped you.
We were in Erice, which is on the west coast of Sicily. And then from there, obviously I'm skipping over cities, but this would be a great sort of 10-day trip around the island is what I'm sort of jumping on. I would say Monreale is next, which is almost a suburb of Palermo, just outside Palermo. And it's just got this amazing Duomo. It's covered in gold mosaics, and it's amazing. And it's in the tour books. It's not any hidden gem or anything like that. When the cruise ships come in, the excursions that they have go to Monreale. But it's worth seeing. I mean, it's pretty jaw-dropping.
And we should pause just in case someone's not up on their Italian. When you say Duomo, you mean church, and it's just literally the Italian word for dome.
Yes, it's the main cathedral of the city. Yeah, okay. So every Italian city has one Duomo, which is their main cathedral. And I head straight for the Duomo whenever I go to a new Italian city, but not because I love churches, but because I love the Piazza Duomo, which is the square in front of the Duomo. And I literally beeline to that square, and I find a cafe, and I sit down, and I people watch, and I get out my map. Depending on the time of day, I order a cappuccino or a cafe macchiato, and I plan my time in the city. And it's a great place to just sit and people watch and get a feeling, get a vibe for the city.
And you say depending on the time of day, so you're following the Italian custom.
Yes.
That after, 10 o'clock in the morning, you wouldn't order a cappuccino.
Yeah, I mean, cappuccino is for breakfast. So if it's breakfast time, you can order a cappuccino. I mean, you can't. They'll make you a cappuccino at any time of day. I don't know. It just seems strange to have.
I think that means you've lived there for a while.
I guess after 5 years in Italy, it seems strange to have a cappuccino after breakfast. But there are so many other good options. Why would you limit yourself to cappuccino? I mean.
And did you finish the grand tour? Because then I want to jump on to some other questions.
The grand tour would end in Palermo.
Okay.
And then there's a lot to see in Palermo. I still haven't even mentioned my favorite place in Sicily, but maybe that's another question.
No, go ahead.
I don't know that you couldn't probably include it in the 10-day grand tour, or maybe depending on your priorities. This is the best thing I've ever done in Italy. So I've lived in Italy for 5 years, worked as a tour guide, literally probably been to every corner of Italy with a few exceptions. And this is the best thing I've ever done in Italy. And that is to climb the Stromboli volcano. Tours I guided were hiking and biking tours. I love being outdoors. I love biking and just being outdoors and walking. And so this might not be for everybody, but it's sort of a two-part fabulous adventure, because the first part is the approach. It's an island, it's part of the Aeolian Islands, and it's northeast of Sicily. And so that puts it sort of halfway between Sicily and Naples. You take a boat from the mainland, and it's a chunk. We actually went to the island of Lipari, which is another of the Aeolian Islands, and we started there, and that's about an hour from Sicily by boat and has amazing beaches, and we stopped there. And then if you take a regular boat from the island of Lipari, it's 4 hours to Stromboli, this volcano. If you take a hydrofoil, it's about an hour and a half. So it's out there, but the approach to Stromboli is absolutely spectacular, because it's a perfect cone-shaped volcano that's sort of emerging from the middle of the sea. And so it's like as if somebody took this cone and just plopped it in the sea, and it's perfectly symmetrical. And on top of that, it's active, and so it's spitting fire. It's not overflowing, erupting in that sense, but it's gorgeous. The hiking tours, it's actually illegal to hike up by yourself, but people do it, but it's illegal. you're approaching by boat and you've just got this spectacular view. You know, you've got the blue sky and you've got this volcano coming out of the sea. And so you approach and then you get there. One side of the island is not inhabitable and the other side has these two little towns. And I think there's two hotels on the island or something like that. It's not, I know people do go hang out there for a few days, but we did it as a day trip from Lipari and it was perfect to do that. But you get there and then you hike up in the dusk.
Hmm.
And you summit in the dark. And so as you're walking up this volcano, you're seeing this fiery fire. I don't know how to describe it, just sort of spitting fire out of the air on your way up the volcano. And it just gets darker and darker. And it's amazing against the night sky. And you summit in the night, and it's just spectacular. I would say it's a strenuous hike. It's about 3 hours of uphill strenuous hiking, and it gets chilly. If you forgot your sweater or your water, you're out of luck. They always tell you wear layers and carry lots of water. And the paths are pretty well marked in the sense that the guides know them, but there are some sharp drops and stuff like that. So that's why they say not to go with, I mean, it is illegal to go without a guide, but they really,
but it's for safety reasons.
It's for safety reasons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing is that people go up there all the time on their own and they camp out there at the top. And so a colony of rats has actually been surviving up there off the camping garbage. It's just really not a place I would think you would want to camp out. I mean, the people that camp out there usually try to follow a guide down so that fall off any of the precipices or anything like that. You wouldn't want to do that. It's spectacular. I would recommend it to anybody who wants a more active vacation.
Okay. So, Cicely, you mentioned two different things that seem contradictory. You are driving, I believe, around the island, and then you mentioned a couple cities where you would never drive again.
Right. Good point. Right. So one of the things that I said at the beginning is that Sicily is maybe a little, I can't remember how I described it, more rustic or less touristy than the mainland, less developed. If you're used to navigating around Italy by train, the infrastructure in Sicily is not as developed, I mean, in terms of the trains. So, you know, the trains are fine around the periphery of the island. The nice thing is that there are buses, and the buses are probably better than the rest of the buses in the rest of Italy. So it's easy to get around Sicily with public transportation, combination of bus and train, even though things aren't maybe as reliable as you're used to. But I think that a car is, for anybody who's comfortable driving in Italy, and it still stands, I wouldn't drive in Catania or Palermo, but to get around Sicily with the exception of those cities, I would definitely rent a car if you're comfortable with that. It gives you a lot of freedom. So I have a trick for driving in Italian cities because I really like reading maps. I don't love GPS, even though I have one and I use it. I like to look in a map, see the bigger picture, follow along. So when I get to an Italian city, reading a map as you're driving in an Italian city is practically impossible. So what I do is wherever I am, I find a taxi stand, I pull over. We used to do this all the time when I was a tour guide. One of us would get in the taxi and we would say, we need to go here. And one of us would ride with the taxi driver and one of us would drive behind the taxi.
Oh, and funny. Okay. That I haven't done. I've asked the taxi drivers for instructions, but I haven't. Okay.
It's money well spent. It'll cost you 10 euros or whatever, you know, whatever the taxi fare is. And you just say, I need to go to the Hertz rental place and here's the address. And especially in Palermo, you have to be careful that they don't take you through the zona traffico limitato, which is the illegal, limited traffic zone where you will get a fine sent to you in the mail because the camera will snap a picture of your car. So you need to tell the taxi, you know, don't go into the historic center or whatever, get me there. But apart from returning your rental car, I definitely would use a car to drive around Sicily and then return it once you get into bigger cities.
Okay.
And I would say that using public transport in Sicily requires more leeway and more planning. Catania Airport is a good example. If you're flying into Catania Airport, you're going to need to take a bus to get to the train, and the buses don't run as frequently as you might think, and it requires a little bit more research and planning, whereas in the rest of Italy, it's the middle of the day, you could just show up and maybe you wait an hour or whatever, but you figure it out. In Sicily, it's a little bit less convenient than that.
Okay.
But worth it.
Who is the most memorable person you've met as you visited Sicily?
Oh, I love this story. When we were in Palermo, there are two big markets in Palermo. One is Vucceria and one is Ballarò. The Ballarò one is the one with where the locals go and more local. I mean, the other one is more touristy, but they're both great. So we went to this fish market and it was the morning. We were just taking pictures of the fish and seeing what was in season and making notes about what we were going to eat later that day. And look at the great crop of this. We want peaches for lunch and whatever. And then we were chatting with some people in one of the stalls and they said, next to where the fishing boats come in, there is this hole in the wall restaurant that serves the freshest fish in Palermo. And so we went and had lunch there and just talked to the owner of this restaurant. And there's no menu, there's no prices. She was right next to the fishing boats. And she just looked at the fish that came in off the boats and pointed, and that's what she served for lunch. And we had this amazing squid that I still remember. It's one of those things that you sort of stumble upon and you chat with the owner, and it really just brings the place to life.
Now, are you chatting in Italian with the owner, and is it harder to get around in English in Sicily?
It is, actually.
Okay.
And I am chatting in Italian. I do speak Italian, but I don't understand a word of Sicilian dialect.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. Yeah. Not even nothing. No, nothing. I've taught Italian. I mean, I speak Italian very well. No hope, no chance with Sicilian dialect. So yeah, I mean, you're speaking Italian. I know they speak English. I know it's more rare for people in Sicily to speak English as compared to the peninsula. I wasn't speaking English, so I don't really know what levels are. We were getting by in Dante's Italian, which, you know, which is still what they hear on the TV and the radio.
Right,
and
sure.
They don't have a problem with that, but certainly couldn't penetrate the local culture to that depth.
Interesting. One moment in Sicily where you felt furthest from home. This is not like home.
Which one? Let me see. Probably in the streets of Palermo. Palermo is an amazing city, and there's a lot to discover, but the key word is sort of discover. And so it's not polished, and it's not sort of presentable to the tourist. So if you know where you're going, if you have a lot of time and you can just stumble upon things, it's great. But and that's actually what I love to do. And that's a fabulous part of Palermo. And there are so many hidden gems. But in those sort of intermediate moments when you haven't discovered the gem yet and you're sort of walking down the streets and you're like, is this safe? And I'm in kind of mafia territory here. And, you know, we've all seen The Godfather and we you sort of know that. Where you are, and for somebody who's lived in Italy for years, in Palermo there were some times where I was sort of wondering what I'd gotten myself into, and it never turned into anything, but it definitely feels like in some places it feels like you're not in Italy, you're not in civilization. I hope I don't offend any Sicilians by saying that, but it feels very raw.
Okay. You really know you're in Sicily when what?
You really know you're in Sicily when... I think you really know you're in Sicily when you look around and you're in the middle of a vibrant and busy and overwhelming and sort of an assault on the senses almost. Your eyes are taking in incredible views and your ears are hearing people yelling and traffic and, you know, motorinos, Vespas squealing by and... It's just a wonderful sort of cacophony.
Okay.
I've spent some time in India, and I sort of feel that Sicily is verging towards the chaos of India.
Okay.
So I don't know if that paints a picture or not.
And last question, if you had to summarize Sicily in three words, what three words would you use?
I would say vibrant. Gorgeous, and authentic.
Excellent. Our guest has been Madeline from Italy Beyond the Obvious. And Madeline, you also, I understand, do some tour planning if people wanted to know how to tackle Sicily or Italy. So we'll give a link in to Madeline's blog so you can contact her if you're interested in that also, italybeyondtheobvious.com. Madeline, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your obvious love for Italy and for Sicily in particular.
Chris, thank you. It's been fun. Thanks so much.
In Travel Resources Today, if you've taken up my invitation to come join me on Twitter, where I am Chris2X, you might also want to follow Travel Bargain. Travel Bargain is a bot that I have put up that is tracking down travel bargains, some of them very good, and if you purchase one, it will help support the show. Twitter.com/travelbargain. In news from the community, if you happen to be in the Las Vegas area, October 16th and 17th, it looks like I'll be going for Blog World. So if you are going to be there, drop me a line at host@amateurtraveler.com, and maybe we can do some sort of meetup. I made some changes in how I use Facebook this week, and I want to tell you about them and apologize at the same time. What I'm doing right now is I'm trying to focus Facebook on the people who are in my family and the people I went to kindergarten with and those sort of family friends, so I'm not using it for listeners of the show. For that, I'm using the new Amateur Traveler, they call it a fan page. A fan doesn't seem like the right term to me, but listener page, and that is at facebook.com/amateurtraveler, and we're trying to have some more conversation there. I'm thinking about doing some contests. I know I've got a survey coming up for sure, and so you might want to join that, and I'll put a link to that on the website, and pretty soon you'll see pictures of people on the website who are members of that group, so you'll want to join while it's still cool. There was a comment left at amateurtraveler.com by Violet this week, and Violet left a comment on the Work and Travel Around the World episode where we had Lisa come on. Said, I loved her post. It's so true. You'll burn out if you travel for that long without really stopping to absorb the culture. Loved her learning about Melbourne waitressing lingo to be a good barista. Sounds like a fun skit. I discovered your podcast about 2 months ago and eagerly await the next episode. Can't wait to hear the one you're going to do on Laos. Note to travelers, careful not to leave your wallet at the bottom of a waterfall there when you go climbing. It can get snitched. Keep your valuables on your person. Thanks, Violet, for that tip, and I'm hoping we get all the details set to get that episode out on Laos. I've got a number of different places I'm trying to line up all at the same time here. And Brad also left a comment at amateurtraveler.com on the show about the eastern Sierra slope of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, episode 178. Said, I've enjoyed watching Doug's Bay Area Backroads for years, and I am really saddened to hear it's no longer in production. Glad to know he's got a new project brewing. I saw it advertised at the end of some recent shows, but I hadn't had a chance to check it out yet. My experience with 395, and that's Highway 395, for those of you who haven't heard that episode, was completely by accident. In the mid-90s, I was camping with my roommate and her sister, a park ranger, in Yosemite at White Wolf when one of the really big fires broke out in the west end of the park. We got the order to evacuate the campground at 4 a.m. Have you ever tried waking people up at 4 a.m. to tell them they have 30 minutes to pack and get out? Can you say happy campers? The only way out was over Tioga Pass, then north on 395. It was absolutely gorgeous. I have many wonderful memories from the road that day. Even though spots were windy, it was still breathtaking scenery. As a Central Californian, it's way too easy to fall into the 41, 120, 140 rut to race back home in time for work on Monday, those also being highways. I have never appreciated what lies just on the other side of those hills. Hats off for an interesting episode. And Brad, hats off to you for being an amateur traveler, someone who does travel for the love of it, that you can actually enjoy the experience where you're racing away from a forest fire. I think that one gets an amateur traveler medal. We'll have to see if we can get certificates printed. With that, we're going to wrap up this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you would like to go to the website, amateurtraveler.com, and leave a comment like Violet and Brad did, that would be wonderful. Remember to join the Amateur Traveler Facebook group, or if you have a comment or question, drop me an email at host@amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.